If you would open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 17. Matthew chapter 17, I'll be reading verses 24 through 27. When they had come to Capernaum, those who received the temple tax came to Peter and said, "Does your teacher not pay the temple tax?" He said, "Yes." And when they had come into the house, Jesus anticipated him, saying, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of earth take customs or taxes? From their sons or from strangers?" Peter said to him, "From strangers." And Jesus said to him, "Then the sons are free. Nevertheless, lest we offend them, go to the sea, cast in a hook, and take the fish that comes up first. And when you have opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. Take that and give it to them for me and for you."
Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you this morning. And I'm going to get into the lesson from Matthew 17, but I got a few announcements that I need to make or add or whatever before I get into that. One, there is a new communion tray list out on the bulletin board in the foyer. So you ladies might want to check that out and sign up for 2013. And we would greatly appreciate that. Second one is that class that we have on the second Friday night, I meant to put this in the bulletin, but we're going to, because we're having a gospel meeting, and you need to put that down on your calendars, the 11th through the 13th of January, we're going to move that Friday night Bible class to the 25th. So it'll be the fourth Friday night this in the month of January. There is also going to be a brief meeting of the men, and that will be in the nursery, our cry room, following services this morning. So a brief meeting back there for all of you you men. And let's see, Bill and Pat Jones normally go to Newark on the third Sunday, but they're actually traveling down south. So remember them, and we're probably entering a week where there may be a good bit of traveling around. Traffic is kind of crazy out there. Let's remember each other as we're doing that. Finally, and this is a very good announcement that I'm enjoying making, we've got several visitors with us this morning, and we've got several people that are here for the first time. So we want you to know we welcome you. We're glad you're here. I hope that we make you feel welcome. And I hope, especially because of the worship and the teaching from the Word of God, that you'll want to come back and be with us and worship with us again in the future, maybe even this evening. But we're glad you're here. We welcome you. And we'd ask you to fill out a visitor's card if you've not done that. You should be able to find one just in front of you. And you can give it to one of the members here. And, you know, just make sure we get to know you, because we're glad you're here. Without any further delay, let's turn in our Bibles to Matthew 17. And let's take a look at this passage. Maybe somewhat of a strange passage. I think I've used it in reference to in various sermons, but I don't believe I've ever dedicated a whole sermon to this passage in Matthew 17. Jesus, as Kenny read for us a moment ago, Jesus said that Peter was to cast a hook, take the first fish that comes up, and the coin that he found would be in the fish's mouth. Now, what is all of that about? I want us to look this morning at this story, maybe look at some object lessons of it. But to set it up, on a trip to Capernaum, you can see that in Matthew 17, and that this followed the events of, the very well-known and famous events of the Mount of Transfiguration. Remember, Jesus went there with Peter, James, and John. Both Moses and Elijah appeared. Peter maybe got carried away a little bit, wanted to build tabernacles to each of them. God spoke, God the Father spoke, and gives his approval of Jesus and the position he's in as Lord, and that he is the one to be honored and worshiped. Now that factors into our story, I believe, and I'll make that point. But coming away from that, then there will be this incident involving Peter again in Matthew 17. And it concerns, obviously, the payment of taxes. Now, the question was simple. If you're looking again at this passage in chapter 17 and down in verse 24, they ask a simple question of Peter. And it was those who collected taxes. They said, doesn't your master pay tribute or pay tax? It was very simple. And I think they were asking it as a challenge. Does your master not do that? And Peter answered in a very terse way, yes. That's all he said. Yes, he does pay the taxes. Now, when we look at this, there is some question, and depending on your translation, you may notice that my translation says, does not your master pay tribute? Some of your translations may say something as simple as, doesn't your master pay tax or pay the tax? But as was read a moment ago, some of your translations may say, doesn't your master pay the temple tax? There is some question as to which tax is in question. Is it the tax that was paid to the Romans that we often see? For example, Matthew himself, being a former tax collector, he would have collected as a publican. That term is sometimes used. Or is it this special tax that was collected by the Jews for the temple? Well, there's some question about that, and we're going to take a look at it. The Romans, we know, exacted taxes from the Jews after they conquered them. The Jews looked upon those publicans, like the Apostle Matthew, who collected those taxes as some of the worst sinners among the people. You may remember, Jesus will often make reference to that. He will say, for example, even the publicans and the sinners will go into, and speaking to the Pharisees, even they will go into the kingdom before you. Because the people just looked at them like that. They were considered traitors to their own people. They were considered people who defiled themselves with the Romans, who betrayed their own people to get ahead in life. And they would have looked at the Apostle Matthew in that way, as some of the worst sinners of the people. Now, we know that the Romans did that, but we also know, and if you want to flip back to Exodus 30, I'm going to read this. We know that God had placed a tax upon the people. If you look at chapter 30 and down, I'll start reading in verse 11. And you may notice that I asked an interesting question this morning in the bulletin, and I said, was the tax levied according to each person's wealth? Whole lot of debate about that going on this month. You know, if you've kept up with the economy and the news and so forth, how much is your fair share? What should you pay and so forth? Well, I find it interesting. I'm not trying to make a point one way or the other from that. But I find it interesting. If you'll notice in Exodus 30, start reading with me in verse 11. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, when thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number, in other words, when you kind of count a census, then they shall give every man a ransom for his soul unto the Lord, when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them, when thou numberest them. And this they shall give, every one that passes among them that are numbered, half a shekel. So this is often called the half shekel tax, if you notice, as I put on the slide up here. It was paid yearly. Notice the point. A half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary. A shekel is 20 gerahs and so forth, he goes on. A half shekel shall be the offering of the Lord. Everyone that passes among them that are numbered, from 20 years old and older, shall give an offering unto the Lord. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less. Everybody equally giving a half a shekel if they were 20 years old, when they give an offering to the Lord to make an atonement for your souls. And thou shalt take the atonement money of the children of Israel and shall appoint it for the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Notice, for the service of the tabernacle. As I read further in Jewish commentary, basically this, what, you know, the people gave animals and they gave grain and they gave oil. They gave a number of things. But there still would be other things that would have to be purchased just to carry on the work. Just like we have to buy certain things and pay for certain things to carry on the work here. Some of them glorious, some of them not so glorious, you know, like paper towels or whatever it might be. But they're things you need. And the commentaries that I read say that this is what the half shekel tax was for the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, that it may be a memorial unto the children of Israel before the Lord. Now, why is that? Well, I think because everybody's taking part. That this is one of God's ways, and there are a number of them, but one of God's ways to include everybody. We're all part of, when we study the people of God, be that the Old Testament people, the nation, or the New Testament church, we're all together doing something. We're all taking part in the work of God. And thus we make it personal, like the lesson we just had this past week. It becomes a personal thing to us. So that it may be a memorial unto the children of Israel before the Lord to make an atonement for your souls. Now, having said all of that, I'm not going to dwell on that point, but there were two taxes that the people had to pay. The Romans exacted their taxes and you had to pay it, obviously at sword point, so you had to pay it. And there was this half-shekel tax that God required. Now, what is Peter being questioned about? Which tax is it? Does Jesus' response indicate? Let's look at the passage again and just kind of look at it carefully. Notice his response. He says to Peter, Peter comes into the house, and I'm going to come back to this point of Jesus prevented him or whatever. But he said to Peter, what do you think, Simon? And so he's allowing Simon to kind of reason here. And if you notice his question when he says, do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Do they take it of their own children or of strangers? If you look at that question, and many have, trying to figure exactly which tax that was being required here or questioned about or whatever. And I'll make this point incidentally, because I'm not going to get off on talking about the term that's used for tax. A lot of people will say the term itself shows you that it's the half shekel. Well, the word is not shekel there. It is a Roman coin. So I have never been convinced that that coin itself told you it was the temple tax. Now, I know a lot of people are, and you go home and study that yourself. I rather look at the question of Jesus. And I think if you focus when Jesus says the kings of the earth, and some people do focus on that, that he's drawing Peter's attention to the fact that there are kings of the earth, namely Caesar, and they would parallel this to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And I think if you focus on that, then you could make an argument for the Roman tax. On the other hand, I think if you look at the question, maybe if you look at it in completion, it does really indicate to you what's being talked about here. Because Jesus seems to dwell on the point of whom do they take it? And then he makes the additional point, and that's to me what indicates what we're talking about, of their own children are of strangers. God had required the temple tax. And it was God the Father who required that in Exodus. I believe Jesus is indicating. And so if you notice, if you focus, then are the children free or of their own children, that it might indicate he's talking about his Father's temple, and I tend to lean that way. If you don't agree with that, that's fine, but I think that's probably what he's indicating. And so, he's really indicating his exemption. And read the question again. What do you think, Simon? When kings take taxes, do they take it of their own children? He would be saying here, when the Father requires this tax for the temple, does he require it of his own child? What do you think, Simon? The obvious answer is no, they don't take it of their own children. They take it of everyone else. And Peter answers that, of strangers, and Jesus tends to agree with that, or seems to agree with that, when he says, then are the children free. Now, I think there's a point being made there. Some also see, and I will mention this in passing, some also believe by the question that it's a voluntary tax. In other words, the very question to Peter, it's almost asking a frame of mind to say, you mean your master doesn't volunteer? I mean, this great teacher that's going around teaching people to go above and beyond even what God requires, and he doesn't pay this tax? That it might have been voluntary. I'm not convinced of that from Exodus 30, mind you. But some have said that the Jews might have looked at it as a voluntary tax, and yet they expected it nonetheless. So in other words, they might have been amazed, shocked, or even somewhat, charging Peter, challenging Peter by saying, you mean to say that your master, your teacher, doesn't pay this tax? That's amazing. And Peter quickly answering in defense of Jesus, yes, he pays it. And then goes back, basically, I think, to ask Jesus about it. So it's an interesting story from that standpoint. Look at the word nevertheless. That also may indicate, for whatever reason, that is voluntary, though I don't think that's the reason, but more so that it is the temple tax the Father requires and that Jesus is, being His Son, exempt. Now I want you to notice the story and how it flows here. Doesn't your master pay tax? Yes. Then he goes back to the house and he goes there to question Jesus, but Jesus questions him before he can. He says, "What do you think, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take their custom or tribute, their taxes? Of their own children or of strangers?" Peter said, "Of strangers." Jesus said, as if to say, "You're right. Then are the children free." Now notice verse 27. Notwithstanding. Some of your translations will say, "Nevertheless." And I think that's a good translation. Notwithstanding. Nevertheless. I believe this is the point. Jesus does not feel compelled to pay the tax. I believe Jesus is even saying, "I am exempt from paying the tax because of who I am." Think in terms of, you know, it is my Father's house. John 2. We're going to talk about this tonight in the lesson. The zeal of my Father's house has eaten me up. One might even look at Malachi chapter 3. And there's an interesting point that is made about the Lord coming to His temple. You know, if you own something, if it belongs to you, you don't pay. You know, I mean, if I had a whatever kind of gathering, and you know, if I have it, it's at my house, and everyone is paying whatever, contributing. Let's say we're going to have whatever going on, and I say we're going to have this special dinner. If you want to come be part of it, bring $5. Well, it's kind of stupid for me to pay the $5. If I go out and purchase it, and you are coming and you're contributing, you're free. It's yours. You're exempt. I think Jesus is saying that, but notice what he says. Verse 27. Notwithstanding, nevertheless, lest we should offend. You know, when you look at this phrase, offend or cause to stumble, you realize that the Lord is concerned about that. Always is concerned about that. Takes great concern or consideration for causing someone else to stumble. Even when, this goes back to our lessons we just finished on Sunday night, even when you're right. I believe Jesus is saying in this passage, I'm exempt from paying. And it's wrong for someone to question me. If someone understood, and they should understand who I am, then they would know not to question me about paying this tax. Nevertheless, lest we cause them to stumble, Peter, go to the sea, cast your hook, take up the first fish, get the coin out of his mouth, and then notice as he says at the end of verse 27, and take it and give it unto them, specifically, give it unto them for you and me. There's an interesting point Jesus is making there. And it has to do with the consideration for those people doing the questioning. And I'm going to explore that a little bit further. So we might ask the question, what lesson or lessons can we learn from this interesting little story? Now, obviously, it is interesting. The kids, you know, when you tell the kids this story, I noted when, you know, children in my family were younger and I used to talk to them, you know, tell them Bible stories. And I'd tell them this. They were kind of fascinated with it. Because, you know, I might take them fishing, and they enjoyed that. And then we talk about the fishing, and I tell them this little story, you know, Jesus having them go out and have Peter go out and fish and catch that first fish and open up its mouth, and there's going to be a coin. And they always found that interesting, you know, fish swimming around swallowing the coin. Well, it is interesting. But what do we learn from it? Let's look at a couple of lessons here. Because I think there are certain obvious lessons. One, it is consistent with the teaching in the Bible to pay your taxes. They're not fun. And along about this time of the year, I start really thinking about them. There are certain things I have to get in order and all of that. I don't like that. And I don't like paying taxes. And, you know, with all of the debate and all the talk about what taxes go for, and when I hear about taxes going for this or going for that, I get even more upset about it. And then I have to back up and I have to say, wait a minute. As a Christian, I have a simple commandment. God says, pay your taxes. And it's very consistent. Look at Matthew chapter 22. Should we pay taxes? They knew. Even then, it was an unpopular idea. Maybe even more unpopular than it is today. Should we pay taxes? Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Romans 13. The Bible clearly telling us there, as Christians, you need to render unto those that it is due. And among those that list, there is custom to whom custom, tribute to whom tribute, or taxes to whom taxes. There is also, if we're talking about the temple tax, and I think we are, there is also the consistent teaching of throughout the Old and New Testament of giving to the Lord's work. Now, since I'm going to have a lesson on that next week, I'm not going to dwell on that point very much. But we are taught to give. Percy just related some points a moment ago when we were giving, when we had that part of our worship. We are supposed to give, and we are supposed to support the work of the Lord. We are equally, all of us, as we have prospered, etc., supposed to give to that work. We'll talk more about that. There's another obvious lesson here. And that is that the tax collectors challenge Peter on what was important to them. You notice, they're not walking up to Peter and saying, like, for example, they do in, you know, the people do in Matthew 19, can we divorce for every cause? If you're a tax collector, what is generally on your mind every single day is paying taxes. Who, and maybe in this case, who ought to pay them? Who might be exempt from paying them? I would suppose they thought about all of that. I might be wrong. But it's the kind of thing they think about because they're tax collectors. You know, that's just human nature. People challenge you as a Christian on the basis of what they think about. And we're challenged like that. Will we comply? Will we honor and obey what they think is right? What they perhaps know is right? And you know, if you disagree with them, differing from Scripture, if you sit down and have a discussion, well, no, I don't do so and so, or I do it differently from what you do, and here's why. You know, the way I see things, and you go to the Bible and you look at a couple of passages and you say, now, you might not agree with that, but this is the way I see it, and that's why I do what I do. Well, that's one thing, you know. People say, okay, well, you don't believe in, you know, you don't believe exactly like I do. Okay, fine. But if you don't do it just because you're a hypocrite, they challenge you. Why don't you do so-and-so? Maybe it's some moral issue. Or maybe it's the kind of thing that the average person out here on the street knows is wrong, and yet you're doing it. And they know that you're being a hypocrite in doing it. Well, that's completely another thing. People will challenge you on the basis of what they think is right or what they know is right. And you have to have a good answer. And the answer, I know it's wrong, I just want to do it, yells and screams hypocrisy and is not acceptable. They challenge Peter. Doesn't your master pay tribute? They believed that it was right to pay that tax. And they were questioning that. And of course, Peter rushing to Jesus' fence. Yes, he does pay it. Now, there are also some obvious lessons that you see in Jesus. Notice, for example, you see Jesus' omniscience. We're talking about the Son of God here, not just some philosopher or rabbi or teacher or good man or whatever. We see the Son of God. And there are numerous stories in the Gospels that don't come out and say, like maybe a passage in the Psalms would say, God is omniscient, but you see it. Omniscience means you know, and you're aware of everything. Well, look at this passage. Jesus is at the house, verse 25. Peter is out in public, and Peter is challenged on the basis of whether or not Jesus pays the taxes. Verse 25, when Jesus said yes, and when he was coming to the house, notice, Jesus prevented him. That is, before Peter could get it out of his mouth, before Peter could say, hey, I just ran into some people that asked me about, are we going to pay taxes? Jesus immediately began to answer it. Why would he do that? To show this. To show that he is the Son of God. To show in this case, his position and why I believe, at least, that he is exempt from paying it. He's demonstrating that he's the Son of God. He is demonstrating who he is, his omniscience. But there's something else, too. In the way he pays the tax, he demonstrates it. Go, Peter. Notice verse 27 again. Go to the sea, cast in a hook, and not just fish until you find a fish. I fished all my life, cut open some fish, and I ain't never found no money. Not just fish until you find that one fish out there among the billions that might have swallowed a coin that got tossed into the sea. But cast in your hook and take up the first fish that comes up. And when you've taken it up and opened its mouth, you will find a piece of money. How does he know that? He's God. He knows everything. And not only that, not only is he completely aware of everything, he can do everything. Omnipotence means that he has all power. I don't believe that this was a random fish that swallowed a random coin thrown by a random sailor or whatever it might be into the ocean at just the opportune time. Now, I suppose that could happen. But I don't believe it is. I believe Jesus has the ability to call a fish to swallow a coin and then call it to Peter's hook at precisely the time Peter cast in his hook into the sea. He doesn't have to be there. He just has that ability. It reminds you, as you read this story, at least it does me, it reminds me of God calling the fish to swallow Jonah. And if he can call a fish, a great fish, to swallow a man, well, he can certainly call a fish to swallow a coin. And he can call it to the line of Peter, the hook of Peter. God is in complete control. It also, I think, demonstrates the humility of Jesus. Jesus didn't make an issue out of this. He taught it. Who he is, who he was, and I believe he's teaching in that, that it is my temple and that's why I'm exempt. Or it is my Father's temple, if you prefer, and that's why I'm exempt. But nevertheless, you know, I thought about this question, and I think this is a good question for us all to ask, and you ask it of yourself silently. Do you ever do things just for the simple reason of nevertheless? I know that my makeup, my initial response is to say, I've got such and such a right and to fight for those rights. Now, maybe that comes from my background. Maybe it comes from my life that I, you know, all my life, different things, different struggles, etc. But that's just my makeup. And yet God teaches us, on the other hand, humility. We studied in our men's class on Friday night the idea of meekness, restraint. How many times do you see Jesus exercise restraint? How many times do you see Jesus have the ability to do something and nevertheless not do it, not exercise his right, not exercise or demonstrate his power, and do that for the sake of someone else? Man, what an example. Nevertheless, we're not going to make an issue of this, Peter. Go pay the tax for me and for you. And finally, I think you just see the example of Jesus. And that all through this passage, there is his example. And his example, and I'll kind of use this to launch next Sunday's sermon. The example of doing more than he had to. You know, that's the nature of Christianity. I'm not going to take the time, but you might want to go back and read the Sermon on the Mount. And notice how many times in the Sermon on the Mount that the essence of being a disciple of Jesus Christ is to go the extra mile. Literally, in one place, we are commanded to do that. But to go beyond what you have to do. How many times do we hear people ask the question, or how many times, let's just be honest, do we ask the question, do I have to do so and so? That's not the nature of Christianity. The nature of Christianity is, what can I do? The nature of Christianity is, what more can I do? But out of service. Percy was saying that earlier as in some of his comments. What more can I do to serve God, to love God, to show my love for God? It's not what is the minimum requirement that I can do and get by with. Jesus showed us an example of someone who did more than he had to do, and no story illustrates it, I think, more than this one. And we should follow in his steps. And you know, probably what is going on here, and I have said this all during the sermon, it is the temple tax. He's claiming exemption on the basis of his deity. He deserves reverence. And I really believe that without saying it, that is what he's saying in this passage. You know, because of who I am, Peter, and I know you, Peter, don't fully understand this, and they certainly don't understand this. But just like John the Baptist would have said and did say, and you can read it in John 1, and Malachi had predicted he would say it, I have come to my temple, and I am the Lord. I am Emmanuel, who has come out of heaven down here. I should be reverenced and worshipped and honored, respected, instead of questioned at every turn. Why don't you do this? And why don't you do that? You know, there's a great lesson in that. Because you get, as a human being, tired of that. I know a lot of people do. Parents, children, old people, young people, people in different positions, you get tired of being questioned instead of respected. You get tired of being challenged instead of honored. You know, as a Christian, you make a lot of sacrifices. You live a certain way of life. And deep down inside you, you know you deserve some respect for that. But you don't get it. Not a lot of times from a lot of people. But Jesus is showing us, nevertheless, my concern is not for what I'm not getting here. My concern is whether or not those individuals stumble. We want to save those people. So Peter, you go pay that tax. What a great, great lesson from our Master. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, you can come to a Lord and Master like that. Humble, meek, loving, concerned for you. If you've never obeyed the gospel and you'll confess your belief in Him, that indeed He is the Son of God. And as willing to change your life and live with the Lord for Him, that time for the forgiveness of your sins will be one of His. You follow Him, live for Him, and one day you'll live with Him for all eternity. Now maybe you're here and you've been baptized, and yet you look at your life and you say, you know, too many times I've not been like Jesus in that passage. But I've acted in another way. And I'd like to ask for the prayers of the people here. I want to put those things behind me and live differently now. Maybe you're here this morning and like what you saw last Sunday morning. You can hear and be a member of this church and together with us all serve the Lord. This membership today, we would be glad to welcome you to the fellowship. If you're here this morning and for any reason,